This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole deck of galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me back on the show is Zach Hoheisel, and we're going to talk about a ton of different topics. I mean, he's had some killer seasons up in Wisconsin. I have not had a killer season here in Missouri. In fact, I haven't had good seasons for the past couple years here in Missouri. Although I've had a lot of buck encounters, it just didn't quite come together for me. But yeah, season's over. If you are listening to this even the day that it drops, that means season is already over here in Missouri. But that means shed season's right around the corner. And hopefully you guys are getting good pictures or in-person sightings, an inventory of what bucks made it through. I know as of two nights ago, my number one target buck here on one of my properties is still alive. So let's hope that remains the case. Nonetheless, this is going to be a great episode, so let's jump in with Zach.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show, Zach Hoheisel. Is this episode 3 for you?
Yeah, nice. It was a little bit shorter of a gap than the first
two. It was like 1/10 as long as the gap between episode 1 and 2 that you were on. But, dude, what's new, man?
Oh, finishing up deer season here. It was another really, really fun year. We talked about it a little beforehand, but I was listening to your Texas episode, so that got me. I was kind of like done, you know, when deer season's over, I always try to hang in there as long as I can because I know a month or two later I'm going to be like itching to get back into hunting again.
Yeah.
And then hearing your Texas episode, I was like, oh, I should have scheduled the Texas hunt for after the Wisconsin season closed.
Yeah, the dude, Texas is just a different animal altogether. In fact, my wife and I head down there Friday. We're heading down there this weekend, so I guess it'll be the day after this episode airs, and we're going to go. I got two suppressors for myself for Christmas, and it's funny because she and I, like, we don't really get each other Christmas gifts anymore. She's like, what do you want? I'm like, you know I want a gun. And she's like, but I don't know what gun to get you, so just go get your own. And so it was literally Christmas Eve, and I looked at her. I said, did you get me anything? She's like, a couple little stocking stuffers, nothing important. I said, I'm gonna see if the gun shop's open. She's like, all right. So I call them. They're like, we're open till 3. It's 2 p.m. And I'm like, oh, crap, I got to go. So anyways, I fly up there, or I run up there real fast and picked up a couple suppressors. But I'm going to, this weekend when I go down to Texas, it'll be my first time hunting with a suppressor. And we're going to go kill a bunch of pigs and coyotes, hopefully. So
cool. Cool. And that was that reel you posted from today? Looks like you made a second run to the gun store.
Oh, no. She, every now and then, like if I'm really busy, she'll just find an old video that she took or something like that. And so that video is from like probably a month and a half, 2 months ago. But yeah, I ended up, actually they're sitting right behind me. I ended up getting a 30-30. I got a 30-30, I got a 22, and then I got a 22-250. So put the thermal on the 22-250 and hoping to smack some coyotes with that.
Yeah, that's fun. I don't know if you can hear that. This train's just rolling by right now.
Oh, that's perfect. how do you like living close to a train? I did that for a long time, actually.
I don't even hardly notice it anymore, except for when I'm doing stuff like this. I'm like, oh, I hope that's not affecting the audio. Or every once in a while, I'll shoot some spines in my basement for my videos, and yeah, I'll have to wait for it to roll by. But yeah, it's not that fun. especially when we're having like campfires in the backyard and stuff, it's just too loud. But I've just recently, a buddy of mine, he put a thermal on his 5.56, and then he was getting into coyote hunting. He's like, man, I'd really like to be able to take buddies out. So he put another thermal on a 300 blackout, and we've been doing some thermal hunting for coyotes, and we've gotten real, real close. And it's just different. Like the last time I screwed up, like I had a coyote at probably, I see it in the thermals. And of course, like I don't want to make a mistake of like shooting a deer on accident or shooting anything that's not a coyote, you know. So I make double extra sure, and then it's like depth perception is so different. So I'm like, okay, that's for sure a coyote. Should I shoot? I don't know how far it is. And I figured it was too far. And then when after the fact, I was like, that was literally at like 70 yards. Like definitely should have taken that opportunity. So it's a learning curve for sure.
The built-in laser range finders are like the best thing that's happened to thermals. Because without them, it's the same thing. I was in Oklahoma, not this past year, but the year before. Dang, it seems crazy that it's been that long. But anyways, was hunting with a bunch of dudes who had thermals, and we get out. We're driving around in the side-by-side at night. Everybody's like scanning with binoculars and all kinds of different things. And they're like, oh, dude, we got a big boar over here. And so I'm pumped. I'm like, all right, let's do it. We get over there. And looking through it, I'm thinking we're like 350 yards away. And the whole time I'm just like, dude, this is a long shot. This is a long shot. Anyways, they end up shooting this pig. And then they go over to walk, they walk over to look for blood because we heard it hit. They saw it run. And they went to look for blood. And it was like 65 yards probably. Mm-hmm. But through the thermal, it looked like it was way, way out there. I think we're probably not that far away from having really, really good magnification on thermals to where even the depth perception is a lot better, but something about that tiny screen inside a scope is not friendly.
Yeah, and like mine, I'm so new to it. Like, I know that thermal has a rangefinder on it. I didn't know how to use it. Like, So we're learning, but that's fun. I'm gonna try to do some of that this winter, some more of that this winter, and then the main things really going on right now are guiding pheasant hunts on the weekends with my dogs and coyote hunting. But yeah, it was another really fun deer season, and now it's just like winter in Wisconsin, trying to do whatever I can to make it to next year.
Yeah. Are pheasant numbers up there pretty good?
So where I guide is at a game farm or a hunt club.
Oh, okay.
There really is like no wild pheasants. You can hunt public land for pheasants during the regular pheasant season. And there are like holdover birds and birds that survive, but even if you shoot pheasants on public land during like the regular pheasant season, there's a good chance they were dropped off from a DNR truck in the last couple of weeks. Like, they supplement birds out there, on DNR lands. So it's not like a North Dakota or something like that in Wisconsin where our winters are just, I don't know, I guess it's or the late winters or I don't know what it is, but we don't have very good wild sustainable populations up here.
Dude, I need to get you up to the Eau Claire area where we deer hunt. The valley that the guy owns, he has pheasants everywhere. And I mean, like, there's years where I'll drive a mile down this dirt road back to his farm and have like 12 pheasants run across in front of me.
Yeah.
Throughout that mile.
And I do remember.
I think Pheasants Forever releases every couple of years in there.
Yeah, I do remember when I went to UW Stout, I saw a lot more pheasants just in, random areas that weren't. I mean, there's a lot of DNR land that they do release projects on over there as well. But like, I had a permission to a property that was nowhere near any of those public lands, and I saw quite a few pheasants when I was like walking through the cornfields, getting to my bow stand and stuff. But yeah, for me, it's just some of my really really good friends own that hunt club, and that my one dog actually lives out there from like November to March, and gets to hunt all the time. And I try to get out there as much as I can to run her and all that. So it's just a fun way to keep my dogs active and hunting. And, I don't really take a gun anymore. It's just, I've shot enough of them out there to, it's fun, but I prefer to get other people birds. So that's what it's all about.
Do you ever band them?
Mm-mm.
Dude, I feel like I would have a lot of fun if I worked on a farm like that, just randomly banned one.
Yeah.
And like punch in a website that you totally make up and like put weird information like this pheasant was born and raised in Japan. You know, and people like look it up. There's a little QR code to scan on it.
We didn't do anything like that.
Had I gone on that pheasant hunt last time we talked? I think it was after we talked.
Yeah, you were gearing up for a pheasant hunt. You said you were going to go on your first one.
Oh, yeah. We ended up going, and I tried to get some of the guys that I went with to hop on a podcast, but it just hasn't worked out yet. But we went, it was like 2 hours from here, went to a farm. This guy's got like 7 different fields that you can hunt. We paid for pheasant, chucker, and quail. And I don't remember the full breakdown. I think it was like 15, 15, and 20 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we ended up killing, I think 14 pheasant, 14 quail, and 15 chucker. And it was so fun. As soon as we got done, we got back up there and we were cleaning birds. And I was like, hey, how much for one of these dogs? Because they had a kennel with like 15 or 20 dogs, maybe more. And he was telling me, and I'm like, are they like fully ready to go? Because I don't want to have to figure out training an upland dog. Like, are they fully ready to go? He's like, I mean, they'll go and pick it up. What they do with it after, like, they're started dogs. They're not finished dogs. I'm like, how much for a finished dog? He's like, yeah, we keep all those ones. And I'm like, dang it. I got one day of pheasant hunting or one day of upland hunting, and I got hooked pretty quick.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's a whole nother ball game when you get into like the wild bird stuff. But it's a ton of fun. Do you have any pheasant or chucker breasts left over?
I do. Yeah. I've got quite a few.
I made this actually like last week. It's the simplest pheasant/chucker recipe. If you just take any seasoning that you think would like kind of go well with this, like I use a seasoning called party fowl. It's meant for like wild game birds. But I season up the pheasant breast, lay them down in a crock pot with like a cup or two of chicken stock, and then just put a brick or two of cream cheese on it, put it on high for like 3 hours, and then take a, you know, like a egg beater or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can shred it, and then you can like make quesadillas with it. You can like put it on a like a patty melt type of deal with it. It's so simple. It takes like 5 minutes to prep, and then you just let it go in the crock pot, and it's really, really good.
Dude, that sounds incredible. Oh man, that sounds really good. We used to get pheasants from our neighbor. He was really big into pheasant hunting, and he was like 80 something years old, but he would go up to the Dakotas every year with his kids. He'd go out to Kansas. He'd go to Nebraska, and he would bring us pheasant. And so she started doing like shredded pheasant gravy over rice.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was so, it's her favorite wild game meat is pheasant. Yeah. And so when I went, she's like, oh, I finally get to cook pheasant again. Cause the guy that used to give us pheasants, he passed away a couple of years ago. And so aside from that, I think I killed one bird, one pheasant when I lived in Wisconsin. I killed a hen and it was with my car. and then it wasn't until I moved down to Missouri, we bought like 10 or 12 pheasants and we were planning on doing like a planted hunt with them. And I think we made them way too dizzy when we planted them out there because my buddy, he trained retrievers, and his retrievers just ran out. Like, he signaled them out to where the birds were planted, and they would just pick them up and bring them back to us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shoot. So we did a European shoot with a bunch of pheasants, which seemed odd.
Yeah, that's a mistake you make when you're learning upland dog training, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, like, his dogs, they don't know how to point, they don't know how to do anything, but we figured if we send the dog, it'll flush them at least. Mm-hmm. And the guy told us when we bought him, he's like, all right, you know, you tuck the head under the wing and you just kind of like shake him around a little bit, and then you just set him out there and come back. And dude, we must have shaken him too much, because that dog brought him back. Some of them didn't even have their head out from under their wing when he brought him back. Yeah. So, yeah, lesson learned, I guess, on that.
Yeah.
Dude, so deer season this year. I mean, you had a killer season. Are you guys fully done at this point?
Yeah, I think the seasons are all closed up. There's some weird seasons going on with like late season, and then where we're at, there's like the first two deer in our county ever tested positive for CWD. So there's like this CWD hunt until like March 15th or something.
But, holy cow.
We don't have any. We're not going to do that. CWD is obviously such a polarizing subject, and my opinions on it have changed over time, but we're not going to go out and slaughter our whole herd over two deer that in one county, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're done. No one else is deer hunting at this point. I'm just kind of watching the cameras and waiting for antlers to start dropping to shed hunt. But yeah, it was a really cool year. Last time I was on the podcast last year was one of my best season ever at the time, where it was the first time I shot a two bucks in one year, both being in Wisconsin. So obviously, you know, but in Wisconsin, you get an archery buck tag and then a rifle buck tag.
Yeah.
And, I never shot one with both during both seasons before. And it was a great year, but it just felt really weird. Cause I shot on my first sit with the bow, I shot a buck. And then like in the first 10, 15 minutes of rifle season, I shot one with a buck. So I didn't even get to hunt all that much.
Yeah.
For myself, and obviously at the time I had a job where I was filming hunts and going hunting all the time for my work, but that was all waterfowl and upland stuff. So this year I had a lot more time to dedicate to whitetail hunting Wisconsin, and I really kind of wanted to, coming off of last year, I was like, I want to hold out for just that next caliber of deer. And we had we had like six deer on camera that I would have shot But two of them that were like fairly consistent and that were really, really special. There is one deer that is just an absolute mega giant, mainframe 10 pointer. He's one extra sticker on one side, so he's an 11 pointer. And I'd guess that deer is like in the 170s. Man. And we called him, my dad saw him when he was hunting one time, and we hadn't come up with a name for him yet. And he just, my dad's really, he makes up silly words all the time when he's just like talking on the fly. He goes, the deer was just ginorman. So we just started calling him either Norman or ginorman. So that was the one deer I was really interested in. And then there was this other deer that I really liked. And I couldn't, he had such a, he had like some inline points. He had a split two on one side, a split three on another. And I was like, he's either a 12, 13, or 14 pointer. It's just hard to tell because he had you could see different points every which way he turned his head. And what was just interesting in like some pictures, he looked like nice. And then in some pictures, I'm like, man, he looks like he's like 130 inches. And if he's like 130 inch 12 pointer, I don't know if I want to shoot that deer. So he was one that I just called him the G2 buck because he had a huge, big, deep split forked out G2. And then he had a big, deep split forked out G3 as well. But he was like paying close attention to him, you know?
Yeah.
And I had a really fun season. Like, saw tons of deer, passed up a lot of nice deer throughout September and October. Had some really good hunts. And then on November 10th, I was sitting and I had done one or two like all day sits, and it was my last day. It was a Sunday and I had to be back to work on Monday. And I was planning on an all day sit because we talked about this in the last episode, but there's this one stand on my land that if you can get to it, it's really good during the rut. Like if you sit it out long enough, something will cruise past you. But it's in like, you have to go through all of our good stuff to get to it. And it's just really hard to access. But we had a kind of windy, misty morning. So it was super quiet to walk across. And for the first time ever, I mean, obviously there's deer, like when you're walking in the dark, there's probably deer you bust that you never know about if they don't blow or run off. But
For sure.
I didn't hear any deer blow or run off until I got to like, to the tree stand. There was a doe bedded like at the base of the tree basically, and I had my headlamp on, and she just kind of stood up and slowly walked off, didn't make any noise. So I was like, this is the cleanest I've ever gotten to the stand. And it stayed really windy and misty all morning, so I was like kind of feeling, it's a pretty tight spot, like I'm down on a creek bottom in a tight pinch, and when deer are coming through there, normally they're cruising through there. It's not a spot they hang around and eat or mill around. So I was like, man, I got to keep my head on a swivel and pay attention. And I was in the stand for like an hour, and just like I was worried about, a decent 10-pointer came. All of a sudden, he's right there at 30 yards. And I got my bow on him, got my camera on him, and like I could have shot him, but I passed him. But I was kind of like, man, I'm nervous to sit here, and like I had just started developing like a cough, so I kept coughing. And I was like, this is stupid, why am I, I'm never gonna hear a deer coming, like it's, my camera's getting wet, I should just go.
You're going through all the excuses for why you should just head out,
why I should head out. And then so at that point it's like 8 o'clock. I was like, all right, I'll sit till 9. Then it was 9 o'clock, and I was like, all right, I'm going to look like such a wiener if I told my family I'm going to sit all day today and I'm back by 9. So let's just at least sit till 10. And not 5 minutes after that. So I spent most of the morning looking over my left shoulder, because that's where I figured deer were most likely to come from and it's where I can see the farthest. Turn my head to the right, and all I see is a wall of antlers at 15 yards walking, what would it be, parallel to me. So he's like dead even with me but walking away. And of course I'm sitting down and he's on my right side, so I have to stand up, get the camera on him, get my bow off the left side of the tree, turn around and do a 180 in my stand to face the tree. And by the time I do all that and come to full draw, I never heard the deer one time because it was so quiet. He's at 30 yards walking away and it's in thick stuff and I have no shots. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna watch this deer walk out of my life. And I just threw two Hail Mary. I just went brat brat. 5 seconds later, he comes stomping right back at me. And I'm like, no way did that work. And so how that all happened was crazy. And then he's coming right at me. I'm at full draw. And he just stops. Like, he didn't hear me or see me or anything. He just stops and looks dead at me. And I have, like, I needed him to take another step or two to have a really good clear lane. I was like, I don't know if I should take this shot. I had a 2-inch wide window, and the only thing I could see was the crease behind his shoulder. And
how far out was that window?
15 yards.
Dang.
He's only at 15 to 18 yards. But I mean, it's a 2-inch window. You're 1 inch off either way. You know, like, I was like, oh my God. Like, I didn't like it, but I knew I had to, like, I'm confident that I can hit a quarter at 15 yards, but it's just intimidating to look at. To say the least.
Yeah, the risk is so much greater in those moments. Yeah. Like, when you actually have a deer there, you're like, I would take this shot all day in my backyard.
Yeah.
But when there's a live animal on the other side of it.
Yeah. So I'm running through my mind. I was at full draw for a while, and he's just staring me down. And, like, I didn't, obviously, I had a full meltdown after the shot on video, but I pulled my release and heard the arrow hit. And he's running away, and I see, like, my entire arrow sticking out of this deer. So I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I don't, like, all I had to shoot was that crease behind his shoulder. I must have hit him high in the shoulder. Then I'm watching him run away. He runs about 50 to 75 yards, and I see him start, like, I don't want to say stumbling, but he was, like, woozy. Like, he looked like he was drunk, you know, like, just kind of woozing around. Then he stopped, collected himself, and slowly walked off. So I was like, okay, if I hit him high in the shoulder, he'd be out of here. Like, so what, did I maybe hit him in the chest or something? And I'm just on camera, I'm freaking out. Like, I don't know, this is crazy. I don't like that shot. But, and then I'm like, I don't know why he's, and then I look up and I'm like, oh, I look like a big just turd in the tree. I got a big umbrella above me. I got my backpack hanging off of the tree. I got my camera arm, all this and that. Like, he just saw this blob in the sky because that tree doesn't have a whole lot of cover. So I'm sure he was just like, the heck is that?
Yeah.
So I got out of there. And so, like, at this point, I thought this was a deer I'd never seen in my life because it was just much bigger than anything. Like, when I got in, I was like, I don't know if this deer is 150 inches. I don't know if it's 200 inches. It's not Norman because I saw all sorts of splits and stickers and all this and that. So I get back and I replay the footage, and the footage is just not, like, you can see the deer in frame and you can see it get shot, but it's like, with all those trees in the way, it didn't give me a whole lot of clarification on what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
So I immediately, with the rain and everything going on, I immediately called my friend Aaron with a drone. He's an old hunting buddy of mine. We've done all sorts of stuff together. And he actually moved down to Illinois now, Northern Illinois, but he does deer drone recovery in all the surrounding states and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, I'll be there in 2 hours. So we get there. He gets there, and we're trying to figure out what is happening. I'm like, the only thing I'm praying for is that I hit him, like, in the chest, and it's high enough to, like, because I saw a lot of arrow sticking out, and if you just get, like, 4 to 6 inches of penetration and it's high enough in their chest, you know, that's what I was hoping for. And yeah. I don't know how it would have been possible because, like I said, his whole chest and his whole – I had that 2 inches right behind his shoulder to shoot at, and that's all I had. And he's at 15 to 18 yards. I didn't figure he could duck all that much.
Yeah.
So he starts flying his drone around, and which that was just awesome to see in general. Like, we spotted a whole pile of deer before we found mine because we were looking further away. Like, I was right on the creek, and he ran up away from the creek. So I was like, look south, but along the creek, because I figured if he's going to go die somewhere, he'd die close to water.
Yeah.
And we saw tons of, like, bedded does and stuff like that along the creek. I was like, all right, well, let's go try, like, where I last saw him. So he flew within 70 yards of where I saw him kind of do that stumble. There is a deer that he's like, that's him, he's dead. I was like, how can you tell? He's like, I'm not going to promise anything, but I can just tell on this thermal that he looks, like, sprawled out. And he was in some really thick stuff, so it took a couple different angles to get like the clear picture once he took the thermal off, but yeah. we could see his rack laying on the side and his tongue hanging out. So we knew he was dead.
Oh man.
So we went in there and got him, and I'm not super proud of this, but like I say it in the video, like it's not what I was shooting for. It's not what I hoped happened or what I wanted to happen, but that deer had enough time to duck, and I actually shot him like in the neck, basically. I got his jugular, and it looked like someone was taking 5-gallon buckets and just whipping blood around. I mean,
jeez.
Not a shot you aim for with a bow, but lethal, you know?
Yeah.
And it actually ended up being that G2 buck that I saw, and he was like, talk about the opposite of ground shrinkage. In his best trail camera pictures, I thought he was maybe 145. In his worst, I thought he was maybe 130. And he carried his mass out all the way through his beams. He was wider. He was super heavy. He had 12 real scoreable points. I would call him a 14-pointer because you could hang a wedding ring off the other two. But
yeah.
And he was so thick, like they just anyway. But yeah, he's like 160 something inch 12-pointer, and that was on November 10th. So I was just like through the moon about it. By far my biggest buck to date, and yeah, it was my dad and my brother were there, and then Aaron, my old buddy, was there with the drone. So that was really, really fun.
All right, guys, I've got to tell you about some of the new XOP products that I've been using this fall. And some of them I use in kind of an unconventional way. First off, I use the Mondo saddle, but I also use their turkey hunter vest. And I take the Cold World stand, put it in the back of the vest, and carry it in that way. Depending on how far I have to pack in, I'll just bring a foot platform. But one thing I've learned is that if I put the seat cushion on the underside of the seat and flip it up, it turns it into a knee pad also. Or I can flip the seat down and sit on it like a conventional tree stand. I also used their holster kit clipped right onto my saddle to carry in my climbing sticks while keeping my hands free. If you're interested in getting a mobile hunting setup like mine, go to xopoutdoors.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. All right, guys, if you're anything like me, you have been doing some redneck engineering in order to hang your shed antlers or your cutoffs up on the wall, or maybe they didn't even make it to the wall. They're laying all over the floor, leaned up in a corner somewhere, and not being displayed the way that they should be. I've finally found an awesome solution with Rack Hub. In fact, I just got the RH2 XL and put my largest match set on it, hung it up in my man cave, and I'm telling you right now, it looks amazing. In the past, my wife's been like, we're not hanging deadheads, we are not hanging antlers, it just doesn't look good, it doesn't fit the vibe. And now that she's seen the mount from Rack Hub, she's okay with me putting them in the house. Unfortunately for her, it's a little bit too late, because I officially have a man cave and a podcast studio for myself, and all of my sheds are going to be up on the wall soon. Once I tested it out and realized that it was rock solid, I went back online and ordered a 4-pack of the RH2 XLs so that I can get all of my match sets up on the wall, and I can't wait to finally display them proudly for everyone to see. If you've dealt with that same thing in the past, or maybe you're currently dealing with it, go to rackhub.com, figure out what mounting system works best for you, and make sure to use code NOMADIC for 10% off your order. First off, congrats. That's killer. I've seen a ton of videos. I've watched tons of videos of the drone deer recovery, and I'm like, I really want one of those. Yeah. Like, it would be so sweet. Because even with like a thermal at night, going out coyote hunting, it's wild to see the deer and to realize it, especially in the dark, like they just don't care. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine if they're in good enough cover, they do that same thing during the daylight. But like, I've walked out on a coyote hunt, looked over to my left through my thermal, and had deer bedded at 40 yards downwind of me, and they just kind of hang out. As long as I don't do anything threatening, they're not going to move. But yeah, watching people go out, especially when, I think the coolest thing is when they lift the drone off and you immediately see how close you are to deer. Mm-hmm. And you get those guys, like I saw one where he's like, dude, we've got 12 deer to our left at like 50 yards just hanging out. And he's like, are you serious right now? Like, we just got out of the truck and closed doors and like your drone took off. And he's like, yeah, they are right there. And you could see both of them in frame, the deer and the people. And anyways, I think that would be cool. But I wouldn't beat yourself up too much about, you know, that shot. Like, you ended up killing the deer. It wasn't the spot you were aiming for, but I've seen deer are unpredictable. You get bucks that don't duck at all, and then you get deer that whip around so fast. I watched a video of a guy shoot one in the back of the head. He was aiming for the crease, and it was in an open field, and that deer ducked and turned so fast that it hit it in the back of the head and dropped it in its spot.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's one of those things where, like, it's not like I was taking a 60-yard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
15 to 18 yards. I don't, you know, I'm not beating myself up. It's obviously something to consider, something to think about, something to learn from. But, yeah, it was just one of those, like, I wish it didn't happen that way. That's the way it did go. I got the deer, and obviously there's, you pull stuff on YouTube and all the people come out and say what they have to say, you know, but, it is what it is, and I was super proud. And the whole story, like, I was after this deer all year, and we were consistently getting trail camera pictures of him on the north end of our property, so I was hunting the north end, but I noticed, like, tons of pressures from the neighbors hunting, like, right on the property line on the north property, and he was always there when, like, on Tuesday and Wednesday when no one was hunting in daylight, but always there super late when, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So the spot I sat that one I had good access to, but it was like, it's the farthest southern part of our property we can hunt. And I was like, I'm going to try to catch him on his way to the north end of the property. And that's how it went down. And like I said, when I saw the deer, I thought it was a completely different deer. But when I walked up to him and realized it was the same buck and he was just something about the way the camera pictures showed him didn't do him justice, I was so happy. And he was the biggest bodied deer. My brother and I could hardly move him. I mean, he was the biggest bodied deer I've ever shot. He was so stinky. His head looked like a cow head. It was awesome.
Did you ever weigh him?
So that's one thing I wish. We got to get a scale at the cabin. I don't have a way to weigh deer. And I'm pretty, even in that November, it was like 40 degrees at night. So I wanted to get him home and cut up and on ice pretty quick.
Yeah.
I really wish I could have weighed him. I mean, I posted pictures of him hanging up on our buck pole, and a lot of people were like, how much did he weigh? That's one of the biggest body deer I've ever seen. I was like, I don't know. I wish I could tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was always fun, like, taking our deer to the corner store where we hunt, and, like, they had the scale, and they would do, you know, big buck contests and pin your picture up on the board and stuff. But that's one thing I haven't done in a long time. Is weigh a deer. Yeah. The deer we hunted down in Texas, that was totally different, you know, like shooting a deer and you see it and you see the antlers and you're just like, dude, this is a giant deer. And then you go down and get it and you're like,
it's like the size of a 1-year-old doe.
Yeah. I mean, Sean literally shot one. It was by itself in a clearing and we all were just like, oh dude, there's a doe. And it's like 300 and some yards. I don't remember exactly. But he pulls up and shoots it. We walk up to it. And because it was by itself, you know, it's hard to tell how big it is. There's nothing else to compare it to. This deer was so small. I kid you not. He grabbed all 4 feet and picked it up and threw it in the side-by-side with one hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, that deer couldn't have weighed 35 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was the smallest deer I've ever seen get shot that didn't have spots on it. And in fact, it was a button buck. It had tiny little knobs on it. And it was just, it seemed like a joke. It seemed like a prank. I mean, when we walked up, I was like, there's no way. I don't know. I wish we would have got more pictures of that deer. We got a lot of good pictures of the bucks, but we did not get good pictures of that deer. And I wish we could have just had him hold it up, because I bet you laying front to back, like, its legs weren't wider than my shoulders.
Yeah, that's, I mean, obviously it was a button buck, but even like the buck I shot in Texas 2 years ago, I walked up to it and I was like, they told me this was like this big mature bully buck that was not kicking other deer off the feeder. I'm like, this looks like a 1 or 2, like, body wise 1 or 2 year old doe.
Yeah,
like, they're just smaller down there. It's pretty weird.
Did your buck down there have super dark glands on the inside of its legs?
I would say it was pretty comparable to, I think part of the reason for that is like all the cactus they might walk through, like their lower, you know, legs are just kind of beat up, but it wasn't like what you described. And, it was quite a different area of Texas. So maybe that has something to do with it, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what footage. I haven't even sent my footage off to my editor yet for YouTube, but my buddy Austin, he posted his episode that he did when we were down there. And I'm like, man, I'm curious what all he got pictures of, because there's things like that that I'm like, I wish I had a picture of just how black and wet and stinky those glands were on the deer.
Yeah. What's his YouTube page? I'll check that out.
It's Just One Outdoors.
Okay.
So, yeah. It was just fun altogether. It dives into like his story of the game warden coming in. Self-reporting and all that stuff, but it's such a fun, that's a fun trip, and I'm pumped that he's like, you guys want to do this every year? Let's plan on it next year. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, if I can go somewhere and we can shoot 7 bucks in 2.5 days, like, I will be coming back.
Yeah, that's a good hookup to have, especially with like the amount of land he has, and it's obviously pretty loaded with deer. That's a good relationship.
Yeah, and like to think there's spots in Texas where you can even shoot more deer. I mean, I think there's states that you can shoot like 5 bucks, which seems crazy to me.
It's more like in Georgia and even in Mississippi. I want to say it's like, maybe it's Mississippi or Alabama, like 14 bucks or something like that.
One person can shoot 14?
Yeah, something. I mean, yeah, pretty wild.
I mean,
stuff.
There's a reason you don't hear about a bunch of booners and like world records coming out of those states, though.
Yep.
Like, I can't imagine cleaning house. That just to me would feel wasteful, even if you have people that take the deer. I'm like, it would just feel weird to keep pulling the trigger on deer after deer after deer after deer.
I could, you know, I can shoot a lot of deer in a year, especially like where we're at. We need to kill those. Yeah. But to shoot that many, and it's just a different mindset, different, like I have one of my best friends in the world is from Georgia. It's where I bought my dog Whiskey from. He owns that kennel, but he's a big deer hunter, and he just talks about like the culture of Georgia. It's just way different. And then it's completely different down there, where they have like, their rut is not like a 14-day window. Like, they have like a trickle rut where they, like the deer, first of all, their rifle season is like 2 or 3 months long. And it's rut through like the whole time, because they have like two different, he's on the edge of like coastal deer and then like whatever the regular deer are. So they like intermingle and throw this really weird rut. But yeah, it's just different cultures, and it's pretty wild to think about.
Dude, that is wild. Have you done a deer hunt with dogs yet?
No.
No? Would you be interested in ever doing that?
So I don't know, because deer hunting is like a certain thing to me. Like, I've bear hunted with dogs, and I love houndsmen, and I'm not throwing any shade at anyone that does deer hunt with dogs. I just, like, deer hunting is a certain thing to me. Yeah. I would hunt all manner of things with dogs. Like, I want to go shoot a mountain lion over dogs. I've already shot a black bear over dogs. I'm going to do that every year I can, or every time I can in Wisconsin, which unfortunately is like every 10 to 12 years. I'd like to go for a lynx. I'd like to, you know, coyotes, all that stuff. But deer hunting is just like, this is my version of deer hunting. So I don't know if I'd do that or not. Maybe. I didn't know what to expect of my first hound hunt with a bear, and it completely changed my perspective. And now I go every single year, even though I don't have a kill tag. Like, that's how much I enjoyed it. So
Yeah, there's something about working dogs, and even if they're not your dogs, like watching dogs work, that I've gotten hooked on over the years. Like, I never in my life had a dog of my own that I could work. But the very first dog that I ever saw work for hunting, shoot, now I'm trying to think. I think it was this dog. This guy I knew up there, he did walleye fishing. He guided walleye fishing and waterfowl hunts on the Mississippi. And somehow my dad convinced him to take me out deer hunting with him. And I went and sat. I didn't have a weapon. We were just bow hunting. We went out to the edge of this corn, standing corn, and he just wove live corn in between a bunch of standing stalks and made a makeshift blind. We get a call that one of his friends or brothers shot a deer, and he brought his border collie, just this little tiny black and white border collie out, and I watched that deer or that dog get on a blood trail and run straight to a deer. And that was my first experience with a dog being used as like an actual tool for something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And like border collies aren't known for their nose or like tracking, you know, they're mm-hmm. agility dogs or like herding dogs. But this dog just went straight to that deer. And from that point on, I was just like, I could get down with this. And then it seems like every time I go out with a houndsman or somebody who's got a trained upland dog or waterfowl dog, it adds a whole new element to hunting.
For sure. I feel the same way. And like, as you know, for like up until recently, that's what I did for a living was film dogs like that. So I've gotten to experience a lot of dogs, and like I've got two of my own, and I do mostly waterfowl, upland, and then shed hunting with them. But anytime I can have an excuse to go watch a dog work, whether it's a pointer, a flusher, a tracking dog, a hound, I love it. So.
Dude, I'm surprised with all that you've never been out on a hound deer hunt. I mean, it's not like it's common in a ton of places. Like, there's several states that you can do it, but
it's pretty much Georgia, Virginia. Like, it's all southeast.
I think the Carolinas. I think both Carolinas you can. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look it up to see how many states it's legal in. But I'm like, I'm the type of guy who's like, I'll try everything once. I've hunted deer a number of different ways, and so for me, I'm good at compartmentalizing deer hunts. Like, this is how you deer hunt here. This is how you deer hunt here. Like, for me, the most sacred is sitting in the woods in Wisconsin during rifle season. Although I like bow hunting more, like, that spot on the hill, I go there every year, and there's nothing like it. I mean, no hunts compare to it. Even though it's not high odds that I go up there during rifle season and shoot a giant buck. It's just something special about it. So
that's to me, Wisconsin deer camp, like there's nothing. And every deer camp is different. Every family has like their own traditions, but our deer camp is something that when you say like sacred, it's something I look forward to more than most things every single year. And that's Wisconsin, you know, I mean, it's like that in a lot of states, but I think especially Wisconsin.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier shed hunting that's coming up. I just had a picture 3 nights ago now, I've never seen this buck before, but he walks in and he's got four on one side and he's outside the ears on his side that he's holding, and the other side's just gone. And I'm like, crap, man, it's happening already. And I don't know if it's because like all the other bucks I've seen so far haven't dropped anything, and they normally don't drop this early down here, but we had a really big snowstorm, like more snow than I've ever seen drop here. And so I'm like, I don't know if that
I'm sure that
happened
stress.
With that, but
I'm sure that stress from that snowstorm could have something to do with it. I normally start in February and I start hunting like shed hunting on public land and stuff. And then I save like our family cabin land, like our hunting land for either late February or March, just cause it's private and no one theoretically should be picking them up. But yeah, shed hunting's fun. And like the dogs, I used to train a lot more for it. I'm getting more into it now that Whiskey's getting older. And like Harley's definitely brought me back some antlers that like I didn't find yet. I probably would have seen them and found them, but it's just a great excuse to like, I got shed dogs, I better go shed hunting. You'll just find yourself shed hunting more, so naturally you'll find more antlers.
Yeah. I'm deciding whether or not I want to take Scout down to New Mexico with me this year, because like that terrain is pretty unforgiving for a person to walk on, but like he could cover a lot of ground, and I've got a bunch of match sets on the wall in my podcast studio, but out in like the bourbon room, I've got a whole pile of them. So I'm tempted to just put them out around the yard and see what he does as far as like going and getting him and bringing him back, if he will. Because he does it with whitetail sheds, but I haven't tried it on elk sheds yet. I just think, I don't know, it would add a little bit more for me to have my dog with me doing it.
Yeah, for sure. And in worst case scenario, if you just take him for a walk, you take him for a walk. Now, the only thing I'd be concerned about, is there snakes down there?
Yeah, there are. That time of year, I doubt we would run into any. Like, it's still pretty cold when we go down there. Last year, we actually ended up getting a hotel the first night. We were going to show up, set up tents and everything. But, like, they got a blizzard down there the night that we showed up. And yeah, I'm not worried about the snakes. I think the other big thing I would be worried about is mountain lions, because the amount of mountain lion sign I came across last year, like, I was pretty shook. I was walking by myself, and I've seen mountain lion tracks in the past. This was a 2-foot-wide mountain lion highway. I'm talking, like, every inch of the ground had paw prints in it, and ended up walking right up on their den, cat crap all over the cliff right in front of me. And I'm like, I'm looking at the spot I'm in, and it's like a boulder field that's more than 45 degrees below me, and then a cliff above me. So it's like, if a cat did come out and decided to come at me or like pounce on me, I've got a pistol, I could shoot it, but the fall might have killed me, you know? Yeah. Like, it was sketchy, man. So that's the one thing I'm like, dude, I don't know if I want him, you know, doing zigzags in front of me where I can't see him, especially if there's a cat around.
Yeah, the cats are like the one thing I'm actually scared of in the woods. But the good news, like, there's no doubt when you see a sign and you know you're in country that has them, it's like a leery feeling. But the good news is they're pretty good at like not being seen by dogs and people.
Yeah,
you know, like they typically try to avoid that. But yeah, try to keep them close.
It'd be weird, man. I thought a couple times that I was going to have a face-to-face encounter last year when I went out there. And the year before that, it wasn't like that at all. I don't think I saw any cat sign. But this year, it was like everywhere we went, we might drive 15 miles on the side-by-side or in the trucks, get out and start looking, and I was back on cat sign. And so, not sure if they just had a great year, if mountain lions had a great year out there or what, but it makes me really want to go out there. And I don't know how hard mountain lion tags are to get in New Mexico, but like, I would be very confident that I could call one in with a call.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can just buy one in New Mexico. I could be wrong about that. I do know that like it's hard out there, even with hounds, like the dry tracking. Like, there's not snow on the ground and stuff. Like, dry tracking in New Mexico is one of the hardest ways to hound hunt for cats. But
yeah, dude, those guys, I didn't get to meet them, but Tyler's cousins down in Texas, I don't even remember, did we cover that at all? His cousins are really, really big hound hunters. They travel all over the country, and they do bears and lions. And I can't remember. It's like HH Ranch Hounds or something like that is their Instagram page. But, dude, you should see some of the toms that they've taken over the past year. Like, giants.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my many bucket list hunts is mountain lion. I want to get all mountain lion, lynx, and a bobcat. So,
dude, that'd be sick. Would you go full body mount?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My dad got one mountain lion already with a bow with hounds in Utah. He has a full mount of that. And then he went to Canada last year for lynx and wolf and mountain lion, but he didn't have any interest in a mountain lion. And just, like, it was a great hunt. He told me, he was like, I asked him, because I've gone on a lot of guided hunts for work and stuff, and I said, the one thing, you know, hunting's hunting, but do you feel as though your guide did everything they could to get you, you know, an animal? And he's like, oh, 100%. But I felt pretty bad for him, you know. He's getting older, and not cheap to go to Canada for a week. And he came home empty-handed, unfortunately, but his buddy came home with a mountain lion and a lynx. So it was a successful hunt, but we're gonna try to get him that he needs a lynx and a bobcat yet. So
dude, yeah, that'd be pretty wild. All three of those are animals I've never hunted. I've only caught glimpses of, I've never seen the lynx, but I've caught glimpses of bobcats and mountain lions in the wild, and that's it. But dude, who knows, man? If Trump makes Canada our 51st state, it might not be as expensive to get up there.
Yeah, we'll see.
I keep joking with that. It definitely, that joke doesn't go very well depending on the crowd I'm around. But like, I'll just randomly make a joke about it, and I'm pumped, man. Even just the tiniest, like, half of 1% chance that it happens. Could you imagine how much hunting ground that would open for us as residents?
It'd be pretty wild.
That's... I'm all in. Like, I'm 100% in.
All I know is with Trudeau being out, it's only going to get better.
Everything's going to be better. So yeah.
We're steps in the right direction.
Governor Trudeau.
Yeah.
Hey, girl. So good. I have no idea what opportunities are in Greenland for hunting, but, I mean, hey, make that state number 52. I don't care. Yeah. I just want more access to Canada, dude. Like, yeah. Canada's great. It really is.
Yeah, I've only been once. Would love to go back. There's lots of stuff I want to do up there, but it's one of those, like, time and money, man. There's
not enough of either.
Yep.
Dude, I get that for sure. What, I don't know, I probably asked you this on the very first time you came on. What's your bucket list hunt? Like, number one, where would you go? What would you hunt? And what would you hunt with?
All right, so do you want, like, realistic bucket list hunt, or, like, I won the lottery and can do whatever I want?
Let's do both. Start with the lottery.
Lottery one, I want to go to New Zealand for, like, a month and hunt, like, number one, red stag, but, like, some of their weird stuff, like chamois and like, some of their weird stuff. So half of the time doing that, and then the other half of the time catching some of the – going fly fishing for some of their monster trout.
Yeah.
That would be like, if I win the lottery, I'm booking a flight the next month to do that. Little bit more realistic. I mean, obviously all of them, like all of the North American, like whether it be, funny enough, like I would totally go shoot a caribou. That's way down, like not on my bucket list, but like elk, moose, mule deer, I haven't done any of those yet. So like right now, the most feasible, which I'm getting super frustrated with because all these states are changing the regulations this year, and there's like almost no over-the-counter mule deer opportunity anymore. But that'll be like, as far as bucket list goes, like a high country mule deer hunt is gonna be like next for me.
Dude, talking about Texas, you can get down there.
Yeah,
with your deer tag. And, yeah. And there's like high country hunting down there.
There totally is. That's, and I'm not saying I wouldn't do that. I would do that in a heartbeat. For me though, it's like, I over romanticize everything.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like, I have this picture in my mind of what it's supposed to look like, you know? And again, I would totally go down to Texas and shoot a mule deer. I'd go down to Texas and shoot anything I can, you know, like I'll do it. But, like Utah or Colorado. Now I'm actually super interested in like Nebraska. Like that's not a high alpine or anything like that, but that looks super interesting to me too. That's like when I think about like what I want the experience to be like, that's what, dude, I'm looking for.
It's tough because when you have that picture in your mind of like, this is how I want to do it, I mean, like big mountains, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
Like being out in the mountains, a really cool scenery while you're hunting is like, there's no substitute for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Nebraska, even the Dakotas, like the Badlands mule deer hunts, those seem like a ton of fun. That's the one animal that I think I've got like the least, I've only ever had two tags for mule deer in my life. And I filled one of them, but the other one, I don't think I ever even saw a mule deer. So,
yeah,
mule deer are cool, man. There's people who are super diehard about mule deer, but I just haven't got that total itch yet. I like whitetail a lot.
Me too.
It's like, and that's... I had, I mean, you got to think about it. Like, if you had a 200-inch whitetail and a 200-inch muley standing next to each other, like, I'm going whitetail all day long.
So realistically, like, I want to do the mule deer thing because that, like I said, I'm picturing a different experience. But I, before any of that, like, I want to go to western states and hunt whitetail, southern states and hunt whitetail. Like, I'm a whitetail guy. Like, I want to hunt whitetails all over the country is what I really want to do. But I want to, as far as a new experience goes, I think mule deer is going to be what's next for me.
Dude, you need to talk to your buddy down in Georgia. I don't know what part of the state he lives in, but that hunt on Cumberland Island, I don't know if you've heard any of the episodes where I talk about that. There is a public land hunt. It's on Cumberland Island in Georgia, and you go back out there, and it is so sick. You can do, like, a pig hunt. You can do a deer hunt. You can do a combination hunt. There's a combination hunt with archery equipment, and that's a hunt like nothing I'd ever done before. I'm talking, like, it's... The terrain's crazy. You feel like you're in Jumanji or like in the Amazon when you're on this island. But, dude, I saw some really nice bucks and more deer sign than I've seen in a lot of places that I've hunted.
Yeah, that's doesn't look. It's not letting me. Google Maps literally said they cannot calculate a route.
Oh, probably. Well, so there's no road to it. You have to take a ferry.
But I'm looking at it. It's not.
I don't even know what the closest town is.
Cumberland Island is right by where I went red fishing, kind of. I think.
Yeah, dude. There's good fishing there. That island is cool, though, because, like, there's great hunting on it. There's wild horses. So, like, you might be sitting there deer hunting, and you'll have, like, 3 wild horses just walk right past you.
Huh.
Yeah,
I haven't heard of that one.
It's a cool hunt. It's cheap to do, and they open up some, like, draw spots, and you just put in for it. But they said, at the time that I went, I think it was 2 years ago now, they had never run out of spots. Like, they might have people apply, but, like, they don't even fill all of their application spots. So they had never turned anybody away at that point. And there's a lot of opportunity to shoot stuff out there, so...
Interesting.
That might be something if you're trying to hunt some southern deer a different way. Like, that's a very different way. But, like, the park rangers are super cool out there. Like, there's 2 park rangers, or at least there was one when we were out there, and then a biologist. And they give you their number. If you shoot something, you have to drag it to the closest trail. But they'll drive up in the side-by-side and pick it up and go put it in the cooler for you back at the camp. And then you can just keep hunting.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a guided hunt, except it's government employees.
Yeah. I love people from Georgia. They're so kind.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like everybody in the South, like, just the whole people calling you hun, that took some getting used to. I had, like, a 60-year-old lady call me hun when I was 18 at the grocery store, and I was like, why are you calling me that? That's weird. But apparently it was a thing. So shed season coming up. What else is coming up for you, or what's next?
For right now, it's winter in Wisconsin. Looking forward to shed season. Going to try to get out ice fishing if I can. And then just prepping for next year's season. I'm going to have a real, real hard time topping this one, but I'm gonna try to put more food plots, more stands, all that. So
when do you get your deer back from the taxidermist?
I'm not sure. So I got the bow buck. I'm obviously getting I'm doing a pedestal mount, and I've got a really good buddy of mine that is a taxidermist, so I'm hoping I get some special treatment and maybe get that back quicker. And he's super busy right now. And then my gun buck I should have back, like, next week. I'm just doing a Euro mount of that one. We were talking about opening weekend in Wisconsin. We had, like, an opening weekend for the books this year. It was insane. So excited to get all those back. And I'm torn between, like, I want to have that head in my house or that skull in my house or doing something special at the cabin because my dad, my brother, and I all shot really nice deer on opening day last year and doing like a 2024 memorial mount or something like that.
That'd be sick. Yeah, I'm going to start organizing my deer a little bit better. Like growing up, we had the wooden plaques and like mm-hmm. the velvet covered skull caps and everybody had like their name underneath it and the year they shot it. And now I just have all my Euros up there. And I'm like, I could tell you when I shot it and where I shot it. But part of me wants to put like little placards underneath them or something like that. So that's, dude, the things that we deal with, right? As hunters. Like, not only do we shoot them, now we have to figure out how to organize them. Now we have to reorganize them on the wall because a bigger buck got shot.
I'm going to have to completely redo my whole living room now once that one comes back. So.
That's a good problem to have, though.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I appreciate you hopping on, man. I can't believe we've already been talking for an hour. And we got to finally get together and hunt. I heard you talking about pheasant, and I'm like, man, I've got that itch now. So maybe I'll just come up there, and we'll try to do an upland hunt or something together.
Anytime you want to come out, we got that the hunt club that's not too far away from where I live, and it's a really, really good time out there, and we can get the dogs out. So I got my dog, Harley, and then, like I said, my friends that own that, they've got a whole crew of dogs, too, that – you know, they're all out there right now, so we won't run out of dogs, that's for sure.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be a ton of fun. And then I need to get you down to Missouri and do some Missouri whitetail hunting or something. Or, dude, come down and whitetail hunt, but bring your fly rods, because there is some like legitimately world-class fly fishing within 30 minutes of where I live.
Really? Both those things are like things that have been top of radar. I've been doing a ton of onyx research on some public in Missouri. That's one. It's just, it's not that far away from Wisconsin, and especially on a year where if I tag out early, I could fly down there for some long weekends and do that. So
it'd be a lot of fun, man. Well, before we hop off, where can people find you? Where can they follow along and see some success pictures and videos?
So Facebook and Instagram is Growing Wild TV. I want to throw this out there again because it continues to be a problem, and I cannot figure out how to delete my old account that I got hacked out of. But my new Instagram is growingwild_TV. So don't pay attention to the old one that's been inactive for a long time. And then on YouTube, if you type in Growing Wild TV, if you want to see that archery hunt for that buck or the opening day video, those are my two newest videos on there. It was just such a fun season, and you'll get to see me absolutely lose my mind after I shoot the archery.
You just go Luke Bryant up in the tree?
It wasn't like that. It was more like a full out meltdown because I did not think he was going to go down.
Oh yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it was a heck of a year. Those are two videos that I really liked, and hoping to get, like, winter in Wisconsin can be difficult, but like that pheasant recipe we talked about, I'm actually going to make a video on that pretty soon, even though it's the simplest recipe in the world. So I like filming like wild game recipes. I want people to, wild game is so good, and nothing pisses me off more is than when people are like, I don't really like deer, or I don't really like pheasant is dry. Like those comments make me so mad. I'm like, that's, if you use this recipe, that would not be the case.
Listen, I love eating wild game. The one thing that my friends recently, and like, I never really thought that much about it, but recently I've been talking to them about venison steaks, and I'm like, they're just not fatty enough. Like, that's the one complaint I have, is I love wild game, but there's just not as much fat content in, I mean, even fat corn-raised deer. Like, you don't get those layers of fat, which drives me crazy, because I love biting into a steak and just getting that big chunk of fat that melts in your mouth.
I'm the same way. Like, beef steaks, I'm ribeye. I don't like tenderloin beef or anything. Like, I'm a ribeye guy, but, like, for backstraps, like, I don't need fat. I like that it's lean, and I'll throw you some backstrap recipes where you won't miss the fat. That's for sure.
No, I'll give those a try. Yeah. I've got no problem with that. I've got a, on that trip that I'm taking this weekend to Texas, I'm picking up my two Texas deer, picking up the Euro mounts, and so I'm going to be back in it with a whole bunch. I think I'm going to have, like, my problem is I don't label my deer very well in the freezer. Like, I can tell based on the packaging or whatever, like, oh, yeah, this is this year's deer. But I think I've got, like, six different deer, probably from five different years in my freezer right now.
Oh, yeah, so get rid of that old stuff. But there's, man, there's just so much you can do with it. And another thing, like, a lot of people complain about venison grind. Same reason, like, if you don't cut it with pork fat, because it's not as, like, it can dry out easily. But there's just so much you can do with grind and all that. Like, I love messing around with new wild game recipes and trying to figure out fun stuff to do.
Well, dude, I'm going to have to try that pheasant recipe, and then hopefully I'll get it from the chef himself coming up there and doing a pheasant hunt at some point.
Yeah, well, if we go shoot some birds, I'll whip it up.
I'm in. So. Dude, thanks again, man. Good luck. Hopefully all your bucks show up on camera, make it through the winter, and, yeah, we'll keep in touch and plan a hunt.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.